Chapter 10. October 23rd. It seems as if every time I open this journal, I have to write down another death. I hate these pages. I hate this pen. This is not supposed to be a record of the people who have died because of me. I want to throw this book into the woods, maybe bury it deep in the ground where no one will ever find it. But I don't have time to feel sorry for myself. I have to help dig graves. The Frog Princess, who I'm told was really named Sherlene, Sir Lancelot, Friar Tuck, and Geppetto were all killed fighting Atticus and his trolls. Poor Pinocchio. He blames himself. He says he was the one who opened the Book of Ever After and set Atticus free. Uncle Jake has tried to console him, but hasn't had much luck. Sadly, we have another tragedy on our hands. Atticus has taken Snow White. Apparently, murder wasn't enough for him. Bunny is beside herself with worry. She wants to race after him, but Baba Yaga has reminded her that she doesn't have the power to stop him. With Morgan trapped in the old castle, the coven is broken, and only the supercharged power of the three kept them alive the last time they encountered Mirror and the Blood Prince. We left their graves in the woods and moved our camp in case Atticus or Mirror returns. We have to keep moving, and I need to share less with the others about where we are going. I've asked everyone to destroy any mirror they might be carrying. I can't take the risk that he might be able to see us through them, and the mirror room is locked and off limits. And then there's me. Something's happening. I'm sick. But sick isn't the right word exactly. I feel weird. When the mirrors exploded, a little piece flew into my arm, and I haven't felt myself since. It started out with dizziness and feeling tired, but now, well, I feel like I'm dying. My eyes are blurry and my head is pounding. I just want to lie down, but I know I can't. Everyone is counting on me. Sabrina stood before her army, their faces fresh with grief. She tried to stand strong. She knew that she could not let them see how terrible she felt. I didn't know this until very recently, but Mirror has been watching us through the Council of Mirrors. He could see us making our war plans from the beginning. The only reason we were able to trap the Hand inside Charming's castle is because the Master let us.
So he can see us?
Goldilocks asked. Sabrina shook her head. Not anymore. The mirrors have been destroyed. Some of the crowd gasped. And we have to deal with him. But first we have to deal with Atticus. He took Snow.
He tore through us, Sabrina, the Frog Prince said. Nothing we did stopped him. He's a monster.
Mr. Canis stepped forward. In his hand was the glass jar that trapped the big bad wolf.
Perhaps it's time we had our own monster.
Absolutely not, Henry cried. You are not letting that thing loose again. Canis, you spent hundreds of years trying to get rid of it, and now you want to subject yourself to the misery again?
I don't want to, Henry. It's just what must be done.
Having the wolf running loose is no better than having Atticus, Mayor Hart said.
She looked as if she might faint just thinking about the dire possibilities.
I do have a certain level of control over him, Canis said.
Which you lost,
Mr. Swinehart squealed.
In his anxiety, he transformed into his true form as a pig, snorting through his round nose.
Then you will have to find a way to stop him, Canis said impatiently. There is always the horn of the north wind.
It disappeared when the hall was looted, Daphne said.
Then perhaps beauty can help, he argued.
I could try, she said, though it isn't easy singing to someone who is running around tearing people to shreds.
I don't like it, the Pied Piper said. Someone will get hurt.
This is not your decision to make, Canis bellowed.
Everyone stood agape at his boiling anger.
I know you've all found it perfectly convenient to have me babysitting and watching your belongings. But I am not, and never have been, a person who stands aside and lets others do what I must do myself. My dearest friend, Relda Grimm, needs help. The only way to get to her is to take Atticus out of the picture. I'm not here to ask any of you for permission. I'm telling you what I'm going to do.
Red broke into tears and ran from the camp.
She needs you, Canis, Veronica said. She's already been abandoned so many times. Are you going to abandon her too?
I'll go and speak with her, he said, scooping up his jar and cane.
Sabrina watched him, bent over and struggling, as he disappeared into the trees.
So, Puck said, that's going to be interesting.
He wants to feel necessary, Goldie said. He's going to get someone killed, Beauty argued.
Isn't there someone else who should be here? Cinderella asked. Where's William?
Without warning, Sabrina felt something slice through her thoughts like a knife. She doubled over. The sensation was hot and painful, but along with it came a clear vision of the prince. He was curled on a dirty mattress inside the former mayor's mansion. But how could she see him like this? Was she just imagining things? It made no sense. She staggered and would have fallen if her mother had not been there to catch her.
Sabrina, are you okay? Veronica asked.
Sabrina shook off the vision. She nodded.
Just a little tired. We'll go to Charming and convince him to help us, she said. But listen, if we manage to get lucky and stop Atticus, there will be no more obstacles between us and Mirror. I want to be honest with you all. I don't know what will happen. Our army is savaged, our coven is broken, and Mirror wants the spell that turns off the barrier. I have no idea what he's going to do to get it, but it's not going to be fun. I just know he can't have it. If you've thought about bailing on us, you should do it now so we know what we're working with.
Beauty stepped forward. I have known your family a long time, and my rage at being trapped in this town has caused me to do things I regret. But there was always something that I respected about your family, your infernal principles. Wilhelm taught his children to stand for something, to look after our community and protect us, even when we didn't want it. Douglas taught Sterling, and Sterling taught Spaulding, and Spaulding taught Yosef, and so on and so on. Well, you can imagine how that integrity made us crazy. Now I marvel at it. I envy it. I will do anything to emulate it, so my daughter will know what it is to be a good person. I will die to protect you.
I will lay my life down for you, the wicked queen said. You can count on me and my son, the Pied Piper said. You have the birds, the widow crowed. You have my men, Robin Hood said. And mine, King Arthur shouted.
It was never a question, Goldie said.
The roars of three fierce brown bears echoed her promise.
I will fight, Pinocchio said through his tears. I will fight.
All present made the promise, though Mayor Hart did so reluctantly. At the end of the chorus of cheers, the only person who hadn't spoken up was Puck. The crowd looked at him for his answer.
Well, duh, Puck said.
Sabrina, Puck, and the Wicked Queen marched out to find Charming. Bunny claimed she would force William to come back to the army if he wouldn't listen to reason. The group hiked toward the old mayor's mansion. The others were perplexed as to how Sabrina knew where to find the prince. She couldn't explain, but she was beginning to believe that whatever gave her the visions was also making her sick. She was both fevered and chilled, and had to stop several times to shake off dizzy spells and nausea. She was having a difficult time concentrating, and her mind kept flashing on something she had seen many times before, a fiery red handprint. There were times when she thought she couldn't take another step, but she couldn't go back. Charming had to know what happened to Snow.
What's wrong with you? Puck said. You're starting to look a little green.
I'm just tired, Sabrina lied.
Puck spun around on his heels and transformed into a donkey.
Bunny helped Sabrina climb on his back, but not before examining the jagged slash on her arm, where the piece of magic mirror had cut her skin. Bunny's face looked worried, but she didn't say anything. The front door of the mayor's mansion hung open, and all the windows were broken. When they stepped inside, it was obvious that it had been looted. There were huge holes in the floors, and graffiti covered the walls. Sabrina hardly recognized the place. The group climbed the once grand staircase and found Charming asleep on the floor of his old office, just as in Sabrina's strange, painful vision. His weapons and maps were gone, as was the portrait of Snow he kept on the wall, and the poor man looked and smelled as if he had been drinking.
"Wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey," Puck said.
Charming lifted his head, as if the motion hurt him. He groaned and closed his eyes.
"I told you to leave me alone."
"That's not an option anymore," the Wicked Queen said.
"Atticus has Snow."
Charming strained to focus his eyes.
"What? When?"
"A few hours ago," Sabrina said.
"We would have come sooner, but we weren't sure you were finished feeling sorry for yourself," Bunny said.
Charming growled.
"How dare you, Bunny? You meddled with my life, my memories, my identity, and you think I should just snap out of it? You try to be a fictional character for a minute."
"I've been a fictional character just as long as you have, William. I had to rewrite myself to keep Snow safe. I had to give up my daughter. I had to make her believe I was evil. I had to make her fear me, not to mention every ever after I've encountered since. Do you think that was easy, being the scorn of an entire town for hundreds of years? I had to take on a completely different persona for centuries."
"That was your choice," Charming cried.
"So you were edited. It's not like I made you into a fool. I gave you courage and strength. I made you the heir to a fortune, and I gave you a girlfriend who is the most beautiful woman in the world. Was it really that intolerable?"
"This fighting is stupid," Sabrina said. "We need a hero, and Billy, that's you."
"Bunny should open her magic book and write herself a new one," William said.
"You know what? You're not fictional at all, and you never have been," Sabrina cried, "because you're a jerk."
"What?"
"She just said you're a jerk," Puck said. "I know, because she calls me one all the time."
"Bunny remade you into the ideal man, brave, strong, and clever. What she did not make is a grouchy, impatient, and arrogant crybaby."
"She's right, William. You really are an insufferable bore, which proves you are not a toy that I wound up and let loose. I wanted you to be dashing and romantic and ever smiling. I wanted perfection."
Charming slumped back onto his makeshift bed.
"Okay, I've heard enough insults for one day."
"You don't understand," Sabrina said. "You constantly turn from perfect into a sour old lemon. So if Bunny didn't write that into her daughter's story, it must be coming from you. You're a real person, William, warts and all."
Charming sat up and looked at the group for a long time. "This is the worst pep talk in the history of the world," Puck laughed. "It really is."
"Is it working?" Bunny asked.
Charming nodded.
"So are you ready to put away the sad face so we can go save the love of your life?" Sabrina asked.
Charming snatched his sword off the ground.
"I am."
"Great! We got the band back together," Puck said. "Now, where do we find Atticus?"
Once again, Sabrina's mind was ripped open. She staggered and fell as visions of Atticus flashed through her mind. He was camped in a house that overlooked the river. It was perched on a rocky edge, probably the home of one of the humans who had abandoned the town when the trouble began. Atticus was hitting Snow White. She tried her self-defense techniques, but he was too strong. Nottingham stood nearby, watching as if amused. Puck helped her to her feet.
"What is wrong with you?"
"I know where he is," Sabrina said.
We have to hurry.
The road that led to Atticus twisted upward toward Devil's Peak, running parallel to the choppy river below. To get to the house where he was camped, Sabrina's army had to take a steep path that cut back several times. Charming insisted on leading the group and demanded that everyone walk as quickly as possible. Canis stumbled forward as fast as his old bones would allow. Though his body was failing him, his eyes were confident, and for the first time in many days, he was not depressed or beaten. He walked with purpose. On the other hand, the Queen of Hearts wasn't exactly in a hurry. Her wounded leg was still hurting her, and she whined incessantly.
"This is a very steep road," Heart complained. "Perhaps I should stay here and wait."
"We've heard enough of your whining and wheezing, Mrs. Heart. If you don't want to go, then stay here,"
Pinocchio snapped. The boy now walked with determination, a simmering desire for justice keeping his feet moving forward. Sabrina was sure her uncle would lash out at the mayor as well, but again, he treated her with patience. "I would probably recommend you stay behind, if Nottingham weren't still around. I'd hate to be too far away if he were to show up. I know it is physically demanding, but I do think it's safer if you stay with the group." Heart grumbled but continued the climb, wheezing like a tired pig all the way to the top. And that's when they heard the screaming.
"Snow!"
Charming cried, and raced ahead.
"Charming, no," Bunny said. "We need a plan."
Sabrina's brain buzzed with possibilities. There were so many different options, all laid out to her like the strands of a spider web as big as the world. Each strand led to a possibility, some sort of final outcome, but there were so many. She couldn't follow all of them to their conclusions. There were thousands of them, and each one branched into another thousand paths. So many ended in the deaths of people she loved. She followed one particular strand as far as she could and found it ending in blood. Still, it seemed like the right choice. But there were so many others swirling and spinning her thoughts into mush. How did she know such things?
"We need to circle around. Try to get behind Atticus," Sabrina said. "It may be the only way to help him and save Snow."
"How can you know?" Henry asked.
"I can't explain it. I just do," Sabrina said. "And we have to do it now."
Everyone scurried through the bushes, circling around the house. All the while, Sabrina watched Charming in her mind. Even though they were many yards away and hidden by foliage, it was as if he were standing right next to her.
"I am here, Atticus!"
Charming shouted. Every word spun the web inside Sabrina's mind in a new direction.
"Billy, don't come any closer. He's going to kill you!"
Snow shouted from somewhere within the house.
"Shut up!"
Atticus roared, and there was a wicked slap.
"It's a cowardly man that beats on a woman, brother,"
Charming said.
"So, you remember me now, do you, William?"
"No, but from what I understand, that's for the best. I suppose if I did remember you, I would have stolen your wife anyway. You aren't worthy."
Suddenly, an arrow flew out the window and pierced Charming in the leg. He fell over, clenching the wound and cursing. There was blood everywhere, and the strand of the future reflected its crimson color.
"You should not be so insulting, little brother."
Sabrina watched Charming pull the tip out with his bare hands and get to his feet. It was clear he could barely move the leg, but he walked the best he could.
"So, once again, you prove you have no honor,"
Charming shouted,
"sending arrows from the safety of a house. I was told you were a brave man."
Atticus stepped outside, dragging Snow behind him. Nottingham followed, with his dagger drawn. Snow's face was bloody and her clothes torn.
"I have no problem being seen, William. Now that you are satisfied, I suggest you leave while you still can. I have my wife, and I'll mark up your little indiscretion as the crimes of a drunkard."
Charming drew his sword.
"So, you want to fight, baby brother?
I promise you this will be more than the roughhousing we used to do on the castle lawn. Father and mother are not here to attend to your bloody noses and boxed ears.
Have your fun, Atticus, Nottingham said. I have my own vengeance to win.
Atticus pushed Snow to the ground and rushed at Charming, his sword held high. Their blades met with a savage crash, and Atticus kicked Charming in his wounded leg. The prince fell to one knee with a cry, but quickly hobbled back to two legs. Atticus attacked again. When he went for another kick, Charming stepped out of the way, only to get a punch to the side of the head. Charming stumbled but kept standing. He swung wildly but missed his brother completely, and Atticus took another ferocious swipe with his sword. This one sliced Charming's shirt open, and blood seeped into the cloth. He fell down and clutched his wound. Atticus looked down at him in disgust.
You were a fool to come here. This is hardly worth my time, he said.
Then he returned to where Snow had fallen and dragged her to Charming's body.
Look at him! This is what you chose over me? He's a runt. My father should have taken him out back and drowned him in the river. Don't you fools understand? No man can kill me while I wear this armor.
Mr. Canis stepped out of the woods with his pack in hand.
I have a friend who might be able to help with that.
He opened his pack and reached inside, then turned back to the group with surprise.
It's not here. The jar is missing.
And that's when Sabrina saw Red with the jar in hand, unfastening the cork that kept the monster inside. She had seen this, but she had seen so many versions, so many ending in terror. Before Sabrina could stop her, the black spirit that resided inside zipped out and flew into the little girl's open mouth.
Oh, boy, Puck said,
and quickly stepped out of the little girl's path.
Red, what did you do?
Daphne cried. But the girl did not answer. She was going through a horrifyingly familiar and unsettling change. Hair sprouted from every pore. Claws grew where fingers once were, and a long, bushy tail sprouted. When the terrifying transformation was complete, the creature towered over everyone at a staggering 9 feet with a coat of red.
Look who's back! The wolf howled. What's for dinner? Oh, I know. Him.
It leaped at Atticus, knocking him to the ground.
I think we have to get this crab out of his shell, the wolf taunted the evil prince.
The monster reached over and snatched Atticus's breastplate, ripping it from his body and throwing it into the woods. Atticus shrieked in fear and backed away from the creature.
Is that all that's inside?
The wolf complained.
Why, there's hardly any meat on him.
Atticus swung his sword in desperation, managing to slash the wolf's arm. The wound only made the beast laugh. Without a pause, he leaped onto Atticus, knocking him to the ground. He climbed on top of him, yanking the rest of the armor off and tossing it aside. Soon, the magical defense was completely gone, and Atticus was just a man.
Atticus is mine, Charming said, struggling to his feet. No, he's mine, the frog prince shouted.
Get in line, Pinocchio shouted.
No!
The wicked queen boomed, and with a clap of her hands, the entire army fell to the ground. Bunny floated into the air and hovered over Atticus, her eyes white like stars, and her hands red as magma.
I told you not to touch my daughter, son-in-law, she said, her voice like thunder. I told you what I would do. She's my wife, my property,
Atticus cried, climbing to his feet.
You should have stayed inside the book, Atticus Charming, she said, as the energy built up in her hands.
Sabrina could see she was going to unleash something wicked on the villain. But before she could attack, the end of a sword pierced through Atticus's chest. He looked down and squirmed like a worm trying to free itself from the fisherman's hook. Behind him stood Snow White. Her face was bloodied and bruised, but she had the hilt of the sword in her hand.
"No," she said. "He's mine."
And then Atticus fell forward and never stood again. Snow rushed to Charming and helped him to his feet.
"William, you and I are getting married. No arguments," Snow said.
Charming grinned.
"That was a lovely appetizer,"
the wolf said as he licked his lips. He turned toward the crowd and stomped forward, only to have spindly Mr. Canis block its path.
"Well, look who it is," the wolf growled. "Step aside, old man."
"No,"
he said defiantly.
"You old fool, I'll tear you apart."
Red, can you hear me?"
The wolf laughed.
"She's not listening."
"Red, it's time to come out of the darkness. You're in charge. You can do it. Just follow my voice,"
Mr. Canis said. The wolf let out an angry protest and doubled over, as if in pain. Then he transformed back into Red Riding Hood. She stood before Canis, trembling and crying.
"I didn't know it was like that," Red sobbed. "The demon that controlled me wasn't so angry. It was just crazy. This thing, it's so vicious."
Canis pulled her into his arms.
"I'll help you."
Suddenly, Sabrina's head was filled with an insistent buzz. It felt like there was a little man pounding on a door in her mind, and when she opened it, she saw images flashing before her eyes. Uncle Jake's face, serpentine blades glinting in the sun, slashing at arms and legs, cliffs over a rocky beach. She looked around at the gathered crowd. Jake was not there. Where was he? And worse, there was someone else missing, too.
"Nottingham!" she cried.
Henry rushed to her before she could fall to the ground.
"Sabrina, what is wrong with you?"
But she couldn't answer. The images had taken over, and all she could see was her uncle watching Mayor Hart and Sheriff Nottingham stabbing at each other with daggers. He wasn't in any danger at all, but the two villains were trying to murder each other.
"You betrayed me, Hart, and that is something I will never forgive," Nottingham said as he poked at his former ally.
The queen shrieked and slashed at him.
"Stay back, you lunatic! Can't you see the writing is on the wall with the master? He can't open the barrier. Isn't that why we were doing all this? The Grimms offered us an alternative. Since when do you turn down an opportunity?"
"An opportunity? One you no doubt plan to keep to yourself. You'd happily leave me here."
"Please don't fight,"
Jake said, reaching into his pocket. He took out a folded piece of paper and held it out to the villainous duo.
"Here, just take the spell."
Nottingham snatched the paper from Jake's hand and tried to unfold it, but Hart seized it from his grip.
"Give it to me."
"It's mine, you fool."
Nottingham grabbed it, but Hart tackled him. They rolled on the ground, fighting and cursing, and slowly rolling down the hill to the edge of the cliff. They were too busy struggling over the paper to notice.
"I should never have cast my lot with you," Nottingham said.
"The master told me you couldn't be trusted."
"You and your precious master. He cares nothing for you or anyone else."
The two stopped their fighting as they neared the edge of the cliff. The queen held the spell.
"What is this?"
she cried, when Nottingham snatched it from her with his free hand. He searched one side of it, and then the other, and then crumpled it into a ball.
"It's a blank piece of paper. This is a trick."
Uncle Jake took two daggers from his pocket and approached the edge of the cliff. "Yes, it is. I knew the two of you would turn on each other if you had the chance. I should have thought of it earlier. Maybe Briar would still be alive."
"You manipulated us,"
Nottingham said. He reached back to toss his blade at Jake. The world slowed to a crawl as the strands of time forced their way back into Sabrina's mind. She saw her uncle's death 1,000 times.
"Stop it!" she cried. "What can I do about it?"
And then the webs were gone, and she was seeing her uncle once more. Just before Nottingham could release his deadly missile, the ground beneath him and Hart crumbled, and the duo cried out in fear as they fell off the edge of the cliff. Uncle Jake rushed to the edge. Below him, Nottingham and Hart clung to roots in order to keep from plummeting 100 feet to the rocky and jagged beach below.
"Killing us won't bring her back, Jacob!"
"No, it won't," Uncle Jake said, as he knelt on one knee. Sabrina hoped he was about to hoist them onto safe ground, but instead he reached into the pocket of his shirt and removed the white rose he had taken from Briar's grave. Despite many days in his pocket, it looked as fresh and alive as if it had just bloomed. With his fingers, he dug a tiny hole in the soil and set the severed stem inside. Then he gingerly packed it with more earth.
"What are you doing, you fool?" Nottingham shouted. "This is no time for gardening. We're going to fall. Help us."
Uncle Jake gazed upon the rose lovingly. As before, the flower quickly sprouted a twin. It pushed its way toward the sunlight and bloomed like a tiny exploding firework. Then came another rose, and another, until the entire cliffside was churning like a sea with new blooms. The roses sprouted around Jake's feet and down the cliff and through the desperate fingers of Nottingham and Hart. The blooms wove through their arms and torsos, ran down their legs and around their feet. Soon there were hundreds of flowers, then thousands, and each flower blossom moved a tiny portion of earth. Combined, the tiny portion became a ripple, then a wave, then a churning, bubbling sea of soil, making it impossible for the villains to hold on any longer. Nottingham and Hart fell with little white petals fluttering alongside them. The rocky beach where they landed rapidly transformed into a garden of flowers that reached right to the shore. Soon, their bodies were swallowed up, as if the earth demanded that something ugly be replaced with beauty. Uncle Jake looked out over the edge for a long time, saying nothing, and then he leaned down and took a single rose from the abundant garden at his feet. He gingerly placed it into his pocket for safekeeping. And then a fever swept over Sabrina that felt as if her very blood was on fire. The last thing she saw before she collapsed was the worried look on her father's face.